My name is Dan Brown, and I'm here today again with another Lenses on Information Architecture. And today I get to talk to Harim Manan. Harim, thank you so much for joining me.
I'm so excited to be here.
That's so we're just going to dive in. And when you and I knew each other back here in DC, you were sort of just getting started in the UX world. And now you've moved out to the Bay Area. You've kind of had a number of now leadership roles in the design community. I'm curious what has changed for you over the course of this career so far. How has UX itself changed from when you first started out to where you are now?
Such a great question. And I think it was so interesting because I was gonna say, for those of you who don't know, but like, how would anyone know this? But the reason I even got to know Dan was because back in the day, I did a design bootcamp when I decided like I didn't want to be a dentist, and I was undergoing an existential crisis about what it was that I wanted to do. And I loved the idea. My husband is in data visualization, and I loved the idea of just like being able to work for a number of different industries. Like you never have to pick what kind of topics you work on when you work in tech. And I thought that that was just like the coolest feeling ever of, I could work in healthcare, or I could be in fashion or government, or like any number of problems to solve. And so I remember I reached out to Dan, who everyone knew in DC as just like this amazing UX leader. And he had no reason to take a coffee with me. And I remember like did and just gave me amazing advice on how to think about like the roles that I was looking at and the roles that I wanted to look at next. And it was kind of really interesting because the beginning of my UX career was in DC. Where a lot of the work is consulting and project-based, and just like, it was really interesting because under Obama, there was this huge push to modernize a lot of old ineffective government systems. And so in my mind, I was like, well, that's what it means to do UX, right? Is it means to improve something that is fundamentally slow or broken. And it wasn't until I moved to the Bay Area that I really understood that that was actually a pretty limiting perspective of UX, because it also, When I started working for a startup, which we can talk about like why I made the transition from consulting to that if we wanted, but when I started working for a startup in the Bay, I realized like, and maybe this was like a narrow-minded view to have to begin with, but UX wasn't just about improving things that existed. It was about how we build the things that we use in the first place. And I didn't, for some reason, that didn't even occur to me, right? Which is like what the nature of the problems that you solve when you are trying to build something that you want people to leverage versus like, you know, a lot of what I spent my time in DC doing, which was improving things that had already existed to be optimized. I think that's like a piece of how my perception has changed over time. Because of that, the more I've like continued to work here and at different companies here, the more my understanding has expanded to really just like see a significant overlap between what it means to design and what it means to build in the first place, like just products in general. The importance of product thinking. I think like here a lot of people are called product design instead of UX design, which I think is the same thing to me, but like really underlines the importance of understanding the extent to which you are building something that you're building a product that you want people to use or understand or leverage meaningfully. Again, I think this is probably something that everyone knows, but for me, it was just like a huge mindset shift when I like moved coasts, which was just like the evolution of my understanding of UX certainly changed.
So that's great. And let's talk a little bit about product design. I mean, ostensibly, this is a conversation about information architecture. And I'm wondering how you as a product design leader encourage either your team or your stakeholders to think about that underlying structure. My perception, and again, this may be skewed, is that it doesn't get the attention it deserves. Yeah. So have you done anything on your teams or with your clients to kind of help them think through that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I just think it's so funny because like there was, when I was at my last job at Segment, we just realized that the very way that people were navigating the product did not make sense. And that is a design problem, of course. It's also a product problem, but it's fundamentally an information architecture problem, which is like really no one was thinking in the pursuit of building, nobody was thinking about how the things that we are building should be organized or better constructed so that users were going through a very clear flow. And I remember like the way that we approached this was literally just like sitting down as a design team and going through our entire navigation and starting to pay attention to the jobs to be done that different people were doing and starting to really map out the navigation of our product to the flows that people were doing. And it was almost like, I looked back at that and I was like, wow, if I was building this product from scratch, I probably would have approached that a little bit differently, you know? And I think sometimes it's a little bit of an afterthought. Another interesting example is like one of my friends just started a company and they're building their product from scratch right now. And one of the first things they're paying attention to now is information architecture, which is like really, really paying attention to the way that the app is laid out so that people are able to navigate it effectively. Because what keeps happening is they build all this really cool stuff and it's extremely well designed and no one knows where to find it. And no one knows how to use the product that they built because it's just, there's like roads, but there's no GPS, right? There's no stoplights. There's nothing that's actually telling you where to go. And so I'm starting to see, I think, like just more and more of a culture of like really understanding the importance of it, especially because, you know, when you're banging your head against the wall, looking, trying to understand why people aren't leveraging your product the way that you imagined. I feel like 9 times out of 10, it's an IA problem, you know? And I think like that has been a really cool thing to start to see more and more.
I agree. I think it's almost always an IA problem too. Yeah. I think it's the one aspect of UX that we've not been able to commoditize, right? We can create standard UI components. We can create kind of different aesthetics and things like that. Yeah. But it's hard to commoditize structures.
Yep. Completely agree.
You mentioned that you drew your team in. So like you all looked at and thought about the IA together. Did I get that right? And do you see IA as necessarily a collaborative or a group process?
Yeah, it's a great question. The reason, at the time we had a lot of designers, so it wasn't all of them, but I remember the way that we ran that exercise was like a lot of times in companies here, like designers are pretty embedded on the product teams that they serve. So what you really want is representation from like almost each area of the nav so that you have like a really clear understanding of like somebody who is steeped in understanding of how people are using a particular product area so that they can represent it in the exercise of trying to understand how people should be navigating the product. And so that's really how we approach that, which is like bring everybody together who has an opinion on how the product should be on like a piece of the product. And then we can start to together construct just like, here are the key flows that people are going through as they leverage our product. Here's the things that should be nested under each other. Why or why not? How are people actually leveraging this? But the idea here was forget about like everybody, more so just like the right altitude of representation to ensure that every product area was being represented in the conversation.
Do you find, here's a tough question. Do you find that some designers are better at thinking about IA than others?
Yes. I think there is, I don't know if this is a hot take. Maybe it's not. There's a little bit of like selflessness that needs to happen when you're navigating an IA conversation, which is like, look, when you're embedded on a team, your part of the product is the sun, right? Everything is revolving around that. And so like when you are in these kinds of conversations, it's really important that, you know, you're advocating for the area that you feel like you understand the best, but you are also really thinking about the ways in which customers and users actually perceive your product, as opposed to like, of course your product is the sun to you, but like, what is the actual, you know, steps that people are taking around how they want to leverage and get value from your product. And so, yeah, I find that designers that embrace humility and just like really are intellectually honest about their, about the products they serve and like the customers and the users that they want to more deeply understand, I find that they're a lot better at IA exercises. I'm curious if you've seen that too.
That's interesting. And this is one of the assumptions that I should question, but my assumption has always been that there's some people that are just better at thinking in systems. And some people that are, for example, like I'm not very good at style or aesthetic, like I just can't see that as well as some other people can, but I can see how systems work together. But I like what you're saying, which is not even, it's not even a cognitive thing. It's just simply a, it's almost a perspective thing, or I think you used the word humility, right? It's just sort of being able to kind of step away from it.
Exactly.
So let's take a new lens to product design altogether. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, and now you've been doing this for a long time, and I feel like maybe there are some underlying assumptions in UX design, in product design, that we should question. Is there one aspect of, say, the design process that you think needs to be examined more closely? Is there one aspect of how we do UX that you think needs to be kind of brought into the light and dissected a little bit?
It's a great question. I actually think what's interesting is like I wrote this thing like a long time ago, when I it's not that long ago, I guess, like but a few years ago when I first started, which was just like we make a lot of assumptions around like who we design for. And I mean this also just like honestly from a DI perspective around just like what kinds of people will get to leverage what kinds of products and how we think about everything from tech literacy to like, language support, all of those kinds of things. And I remember like the reason I was thinking about this and I wrote about that at the time was because I was working on a project for USCIS. It was like our immigration services. And like the team was, majority white. And the team was like pretty much just like the demographic we were serving was mostly Hispanic. And the way that we were building the product was really imagining just like people from the majority group leveraging the product to move quickly throughout really, really complex information. I mean, if you've ever touched anything immigration related, like it's just like so confusing, so technical, so many policies and numbers and titles of things that don't make a lot of sense. And I think like a big assumption that I would challenge is just like, how deeply do we think about who we design for? And I think like there's a lot of, there's been a lot of takes over the years around personas and how useful they are and like how they should be leveraged in the design process. But I think there's like an element of like, even if you're not putting pen to paper around a persona, who the people are in your mind that you imagine when you're building and designing products for really matters. And I haven't seen much rigor around the evolution there. And I don't even think it's any one person's fault, by the way. Like I think the people that you grew up reading about in like storybooks and watch on TV shows, of course, those are the people that you imagine are using your products, right? Like this thing is like kind of deeply steeped in the world that we live in. But I think that's something that I haven't seen as much evolution around, that I feel like is a core assumption that we make around like who are these products for? Whether they're like crypto products or like, healthcare products or immigration products or whatever it is, who are these services that we are building for? And like, do we understand the people who are using them as well as we think we do? And I would challenge the extent to which we think we do.
Right. Do you think personas as a tool are broken because they clearly don't do a good job in helping us imagine that? Or is not the personas that are broken, but the process of creating them or
Yeah,
something else?
I think it might be the process of creating them. I think like personas are limited by the bounds of our imagination. And if you are unable to imagine, a world in which somebody is looks different from you or is different from you in how they leverage products, then that is quite limiting. And I think a lot of this comes down to honestly, like empathy is like this loose concept. That we talk about a lot in the design industry, but it's actually like a verb and I think just like a discipline. I think you have to kind of treat it like working out. It's like you have to just like go and seek it out every day and like really build it and make it a stronger muscle. And it's not something that is just going to come to you one day by being like, I think I'm a nice enough person. I could be empathetic. It's really one of those things that you have to like actively seek, consume, crave, and then build over time because that's really where a lot of this comes from.
So if you had someone on your team, say a relatively new UX person, and you wanted them to try and build this empathy muscle, is there particular piece of advice or a suggestion that you would give them to do that?
Yeah. I mean, I think the reality is like, go and talk to your users, right? And go and talk to the people that your product serves. And I actually think you should also go and talk about it to people who don't know what your product is and see how it is perceived by them. I think that's a really great exercise. You know, we talk a lot about like the mom test and like, can you explain it to your mom? Well, can you explain it to like a demographic that is supposed to be able to understand what your product is? And would they be able to like pick it up and actually be able to use it? I think a great example is this was like, when I was in DC, one of the big projects we worked on was USA Jobs. And that was like, I mean, the federal hiring system is so hard, like as in there's just like so many policies and laws around it. And we would do this thing where we were like, we would just like set up in an agency and go and test like basically a lot of the policies and the nomenclature around hiring with people there who were like kind of walking through the halls there. And then we realized like, of course, these people are amazing at understanding what we're trying to say here and the process we're trying to make clearer. They already have federal jobs. Like we never even thought about testing with people who were like, you know, applying to these jobs day in and day out. And there were like 90,000 people who are like trying to get federal jobs that don't understand what it means, like for a job to be, you know, preferred for veterans or things like that, just like small pieces of both, content and then also honestly information architecture that would have made it significantly easier for them to consume if we had paid more attention to. And I think part of that was just like what we actually needed to do was go out there and talk to people. And I think like at the end of the day, it's like it is as simple as that, which is like go out there and talk to people and pretty much anybody, not just people that you think would be using it, but also people that you think should be using it.
Do you have a story about maybe a user interview or user research study that you did where you feel like that was very eye-opening for you, where you finally got to talk to someone and it was like, oh, this is the way people are looking at this?
Oh my God. Yeah. There was this other project that we did at that company where the concept was like in your free time at a consulting firm, you can basically build whatever products you want in service of the firm. And we were partnering with this organization called Homestretch that did really amazing work for homeless youth in DC. And so we were like building them a product that helped like homeless people find just shelters that were nearby, because a lot of the information was like all pretty disparate across a bunch of different websites and agencies. And so we wanted to consolidate it as much as possible. And I remember being in this meeting at like, it was like a bunch of us at this consulting firm and we're like sitting there in our nice conference room and we're like, oh my God, how are people going to be able to use this product? They don't have phones. Like they're never going to be able to like actually leverage the internet to use this product. And I remember like we went back and forth and debated that for I think like an hour and a half. And then the next day we went to go visit a couple of homeless shelters to go talk to some people. And these people had like 10x nicer phones than like I ever did. And I remember just being there and being like, wow, the way that you imagine an unhoused person from like TV or whatever, and this is a classic example of like, if I'd gone out and talked to a single person, like what I realized was like the unhoused population looks really different. It can look like somebody that is just like, can't afford to pay rent. And so it's couch surfing somewhere else. It doesn't mean they don't have access to like internet. And just like it was a very reductive one-dimensional view of from me about like what kind of products people needed. And I thought the irony is I thought I was being deeply empathetic by being like, oh, that, you know, they won't have access to this technology. And so we should be really thoughtful about that. We don't need to make it mobile friendly. They don't have phones and like all of this stuff. And then you go and you survey people at actual shelters and 99% of them had really great cell phone plans. And I was just like, I remember just being speechless and being like, this is just such an exercise. I'm like, go talk to people, right? Yeah. Because you just don't know. Yeah.
After your other stories in DC, I'm not sure if it would be harder to find a job in the federal government or immigrate to the US. Both of those seem like very challenging bureaucratic things.
Oh, man. And you would think those are just like the two.
Like, what else is there, really?
What else is there? Move here and get a job, right? That's the American dream. And it's like, actually, for some people, it's the American nightmare, right? Like, it's not very easy, you know?
So I wonder if you might help me deconstruct a preconception that I have. And specifically picked this one out because of how we met. And I mean, all the writing that you've done, all the tweeting that you've done, I feel like you've really challenged my thinking in a lot of ways. And I'm grateful for it, right? I do feel like sometimes an old dog who struggles to learn the ways of the world these days. So I have this preconception that information architecture is not adequately taught in boot camps, where a lot of folks are kind of entering the industry from. And that my bias, my perhaps prejudice, is that it's too complicated to teach in boot camps. And so it's just ignored. And I know you've had some experience with boot camps. You've probably hired a bunch of designers, some through, some not through. And I'm just curious, do you feel like there's that I'm overstating it? And that maybe there's a way to help newer designers get more comfortable with information architecture?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good point. I also agree with you. Obviously I did a boot camp. I also taught at the boot camp after, where I was like, okay, like, and I remember the reason I taught at it after is because I was like, there's a lot here that I feel like I didn't learn. And I want to try to teach it. The curriculums are pretty rigid, so you can't do that. It turns out. So I would just like remix the classes as much as I could. And I remember when we were talking about information architecture, it's such a like, it's actually a really scary word, by the way. If you're not in UX, like the phrase information architecture just sounds really heavy. And it sounds like something that, you know, the way that a lot of them teach it is like, oh, this was born from libraries. And like, this is like a really academic concept. It's almost just painted as like a very unachievable end state. And they kind of teach you like, it's almost like, because it's painted as like this unattainable thing, the way that it is usually taught is like, if you understand card sorting, then you can understand information architecture. That's all you really need to understand. What ends up happening is because you make it so scary and because you teach it in a, such a reductive way, people really leave not fully understanding not only what it is, but also just like that it's one of the most foundational pieces that like you have to be able to understand to build anything well. I remember when I left my bootcamp or graduated and then started at the consulting firm, you know, you do all these different projects in consulting and every single project I was on needed like deep IA thinking. And I like was kind of starting from scratch every single time. It didn't matter if it was a project I was joining at the beginning, middle, or end. It didn't matter if it was a product that had been built or like that wasn't testing, whatever it was, there was a giant IA component to it. And all I had with me in my tool belt was like card sorting as like a potential thing I could pull out one day and be like, how do we organize information? And obviously it's like, it's so much more nuanced than that and deserves a lot more attention than that. I think it's one of those things actually where it's like the way that it's structured right now in a lot of boot camps is like, it is a class. It could really be a boot camp in and of itself. And I think like the industry would be pretty well served with, I think designers and honestly, like product owners, product managers, whatever, going through an IA type bootcamp to deeply understand like how to peel apart problems to their very core and think about like the nouns and primitives that you are working with and how they should be structured. Because again, we just talked about how it's like the root of 90%+ of challenges people have with navigating products. And if you are actually not literate in the language of information architecture, there's only so much you can do to like paint on top of broken furniture, right? Like if you're sitting on a chair and the chair is broken, you're still gonna fall. And I think like there's a component of like, no one is teaching you how to fix the chair that our industry would be really a lot better served with. So all that is to say, I agree with you.
Yeah, but you added some nuance there, which is IA itself has, let's just call it a branding problem where it is complex and it is hard. But it's sort of, it also has, I don't know, over the years created this distance, created this gap for itself where it says, I'm too inaccessible. I'm too academic to be meaningful inside a boot camp.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that point. Do you think we should change the name of IA? Do you think, what do you think we can do to IA to make it, besides creating a unique bootcamp, a standalone bootcamp, do you feel like there's something that we can do to IA to make it more accessible?
Yeah, you know, I actually think like your lenses do a great job of this, but there's just like breaking it down into parts, right? That are a lot easier to consume by people, which is like, what exactly are we talking about here is actually where most people miss the mark. I also think part of this is a fundamental, like absent the, like do a separate IA bootcamp, there, it should be the first thing we learn in bootcamps. We should kind of restructure it so that it's like, hey, this is like this in Maslow's hierarchy of design, like this is the lowest, this is the base need, right? Like this is the foundation upon which you stand. And I think a little bit of reframing around like, hey, this is a non-optional critical piece of what you need to learn here. It is very learnable. You get better at it with practice and it's going to be fine, but this is how projects should start. And if it's not right, then this projects can't end, like, you know, without this. And I think like just a little bit of a tone change around how it's taught in the places that it is taught, I actually think would go a really long way.
Areem, that was amazing. I think we will end it there. Thank you so much.
Great, thank you.